Radio.
And then we have this crazy, like voiceover by Picard. It's like, you know, the nanites have left his body, and then we were able to transport them over to planet Boga Loga Joe 7, where they will live forever, and we'll never pick that up again.
Seven.
Well, I gotta
we
keep
are traveling at warp 9 to the Boga Loga Joe system. Seven planets. And
and yet you remembered what it was called. You see? It's catchy.
Are you insane?
They are insane!
In the hands of an adolescent.
It is a cellular peptide cake.
Inaccurate. But Met Frosting.
It does like you.
Mr. Kip.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
How you doing, Mike?
You are very strange looking creatures.
All right, here we go. You have been through the long night, through the darkness, without, I just want to talk about Star Trek, for too long. Now, for your patience, for your perseverance, the moon clears away, revealing the light which was always there for you. You had the inner light within you, but now comes the twin suns, the binary sun system, star system, that is myself and the doctor. The end. Hello, everyone. Hello, all of you. Hello, Jim, who just texted me, or he tweeted me and said, "What, Jim Dabber?" He said, "Hey, man, what's going on?" And I was like, "Ah, I know. He says, "How come you haven't done I just want to talk about Star Trek?" And I said, I know.
Letting your fans down.
I'm letting Jim down. Jim. How can I let Jim down? I'm Mike McCafferty, and I am joined by
Kim Miller,
otherwise known as
the Doctor.
The Doctor.
Featured heavily in this episode.
Featured heavily, but not very efficiently, very effectively in this episode. We do a podcast when we're not like trying to set up the podcast about Star Trek. This podcast is called I Just Want to Talk About Star Trek, isn't it, Kim?
Yes.
Normally we're joined by Jason McCarris, but because Jason chose to do our Game of Thrones podcast without me, I have retaliated in kind, Jason.
I believe you were occupied. You were sorely missed.
I was sorely missed. But now it doesn't matter. I can create whatever I want. I can create whatever sort of vengeance I want. I was fast asleep because I've been gone these past couple weeks. I mean, none of you care about this. This is fine, but I care about this, and it's pertinent.
I want to know where you've been.
Here's where I've been. On Monday, August 21st, I traveled from Los Angeles, California, all the way up to Lebanon, Oregon, to watch the solar eclipse. I promised my kid 3 years ago in 2014, I said, "I am going to this eclipse." And he said, "Can I come?" And I said, "Yes." And that was a mistake. I should not have promised that because then I had to go.
Well, you've been talking about it for a long time.
I have. I invited you. I invited you and Jason.
Oh, I feel bad I didn't go. I missed it.
It was amazing. Everyone, it was amazing. It was so good. But it was about 26 hours of driving from here. So, you know.
I feel it was worth it.
I feel it was 100% worth it. It was so good. It was so amazing. Maybe I'll post the footage of my son and I enjoying it. You saw that, didn't you, Kim?
Yeah, I was bummed that you stopped the camera.
Well, I didn't stop the camera. I ran like a fool and was like, "Oh my god, look at that!" Like after the eclipse happened and we saw the diamond ring effect, and then like the sun was blotted out. And it's like I had it set up on our car to record us. But I was so freaked out. I was like, "Oh, I gotta put this on the camera." So I grabbed my phone from its very effective space and pointed it at this image, which it did not get very well. And then I was holding it in my hand for the rest of the 90 seconds because it was only 90 seconds that we had.
Oh, so what you posted was edited?
Yes, I pulled off.
Oh, okay.
Because we started like a minute and a half or 2 minutes early, and then I got the whole footage, but it was just like of my face, like my chin, and then like the pockets and the ground, and it was just terrible. It was terrible. You could hear it all, but you couldn't see it. So I got the stuff to where
from an eclipse, the audio experience.
Yes, it's the most impressive visual thing you'll ever see, and you can just hear it. So, but that's how primal it was. That's how excited I was. Is that I was fully aware, like I knew, like instinctively, I should just leave that camera there, and just like let it film. But then once the lights went out, I lost all cognitive abilities.
Like primitive man. Yeah. You freaked out.
I threw rocks,
throwing rocks at the kill it.
The demon has returned. Oh no.
Ra's angry.
I did. I lost my cool. Actually, if you listen to the video, there's a guy who set up a telescope and he's like, Oh, that's not me. he really loses it. Yeah, I know. I watch my mouth. I don't make that sound.
Stripped off your clothes.
Yeah. If it was longer, I might have. Fortunately, it was only that long. But it was spectacular. It was great. My kids saw it. And the doctor, Kim, reminded me that perhaps this is somehow synergistic with the episode, third season TNG episode. Episode one of Evolution. Mm-hmm. And so I
was trying to think of some big event comparable to the eclipse that has happened in a Star Trek episode. And that was the first one that came to mind.
Right. And it was the wrong one to pick because this is...
yeah. Not the most exciting episode.
Well, see, here's the thing is that like I was, you know, I've been kind of on this like, oh, maybe, you know, I'm starting to get back into Next Generation. And you suggested it, and so I started watching, like, the first 15 minutes, 20 minutes. And then, like, you started to posit, like, some different episodes today. You're like, oh, maybe there's something better. I was like, no, this is a good one. We'll watch it.
Surprise me.
Because the first 15 or 20 minutes aren't that bad. Like, they set up very nicely. And then it doesn't go off the rails, but it doesn't stay on the rails. It kind of goes, like, rails adjacent. It's just not that good.
It's interesting in that it is notable for the reintroduction of Beverly after her 1 year absence at Starfleet Medical.
Yeah.
And it introduces the nanites, which are mentioned frequently over the next couple seasons.
Yes. Yeah. The thing I liked about this, and so let's just dive into this a little bit. I did like that this is the first of like the Renaissance period of Next Generation.
Like, yeah, season three is when it kind of started to turn around, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the writer's strike is over from season two. You know, they've gotten rid of, like, I mean, Gene Roddenberry's out.
That early? Was
yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, like two seasons and he's out. Maybe even a little
Why?
Before that.
I don't remember. What happened? Why?
I don't remember.
Did you tell me before?
If you want to know more about this, you have to watch... what is it? Chaos on the Bridge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a documentary. It's great. It's a great documentary. It talks, just details all of that. How, you know, how.
Wasn't it? Hmm? He wanted more control and people were objecting to that and something about, like, he would go in and edit scripts, you know, without people's permission.
I can't remember all the stuff. I remember that he, basically, they were going to do the series without him. And he used, like, you know, he basically bullied his way into becoming the showrunner for it just by force of saying, well, if I'm not part of this, the fans are going to freak out. And they're like, all right. But by the third season, they're like, we got to get rid of you. Because he loved to tangle with the network executives. He just thought, he did it before. He's going to do it again. And I'll have to watch that again because it's a good documentary.
And those first two seasons were kind of... damning, I guess. Damning
evidence. Yeah, they're pretty bad. Now, I think in the second season, they had a different showrunner, which is why they got rid of Beverly. The guy was just like, I don't like you, or you pissed me off, so I'm gonna fire you. So he fired her, essentially. Gates McFadden. And so this is her triumphant return.
Why? How did she piss him off? I got to watch Chaos on the Fridge again.
You do. It's like the guy was a sexist, and I think she took umbrage to something he said, and he's just like, well, I'll just, you know, get rid of you, you know. I'm not 100% certain about that, but
I guess early on, like, what's her name? Denise Crosby had already left, and I guess it didn't seem that weird at the time to get rid of one of their main cast members.
No, I mean, Denise Crosby, she left, so they just decided to get rid of Gates McFadden and bring on Dinah Muldar as, you know, Pulaski, and then that didn't work out. Like the crew, or I mean, the cast didn't like her, and she didn't like the cast, so there's like no love lost. And so when this showrunner left, or I can't remember, I think he's a showrunner, executive producer, they brought back Gates from her scintillating performance in The Hunt for Red October.
She says one scene where she plays the wife of Alec Baldwin?
Yeah, character? Yeah, she's like Alec Baldwin's wife for some reason. Like, she's in one little scene, like, for like two lines. I'm like, oh, there's Gates McFadden. And there she goes. Okay, well, she's doing well.
So what happened to bring Gates McFadden back?
I don't know, but
weird.
Yeah, I'll be going through this. I'm finally I'm ready to do my Lost Women of Star Trek series. I'm working on the first episode, so stick around for that. That's going to be my
series. Ooh.
Well, Feral keeps, you know, Feral Audio, they keep pushing me to make it bigger. And I think I figured out a way to make it like four or five episodes. I think I was able to split it up.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Yeah, they'll be shorter, but who cares? You know, I mean, it's going to be good. So we'll talk all about that. We'll talk about like the loss of Denise Crosby and Gates McFadden and then Dinah Muldar. We'll go through all of those characters.
What about Guinan, who appears in this episode as well?
But she was in before. She was, yeah.
I was curious about that, too, and I looked it up, and her first appearance was in The Offspring. Is that the name of it? When Deanna is pregnant. Know this. I will have this child.
Oh. I don't remember that. She says that?
But know this. Yeah, she does this weird pause and turn to the rest of the crew.
Oh, God.
They're all arguing about whether or not she should end that pregnancy because it's an alien.
Oh, wow. God, I have to watch that one. Second season, a little up and a little down, but Whoopi Goldberg is in the second season, because she's, I do remember, because when Q Who happens with the Borg, she's the one who says that they're called the Borg.
Is that the one where when she sees him and she does this?
Yeah, I think she does. That's right. Yeah,
I don't know how to translate that to podcasts.
Well, she holds her hands up in little like little cat claws towards Q. You all know what I'm talking about. You all remember that moment because you hoped that Guinan had more powers than just serving drinks and dispensing, you know, witticisms and you know,
wearing big hats
where she draws the universal energy into her head. But she did do that weird little claw thing in that episode.
We've had dealings before.
You can tell that the writer had no idea like what to do with these two. It's like, oh, well, I'll just tease that, and then they never paid it off.
That's when Q says that she's a changeling, Picard.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Is that what you're calling yourself now?
Well, this one, she says she has, like, many husbands and many children and only...
A lot.
What's that?
You have a lot of children? A lot.
Yeah, a lot, yeah. But only one that didn't listen to her. Now, as you can tell, this episode, we are eclipsing it with better episodes that we want to talk about, to be honest. It's
That's true. Yeah, why don't we talk about a Q episode? Those are...
Well, we don't, because we didn't watch one.
Stick to the eclipse.
No, we have to... I'm as constant as the Northern Star. We will talk about this. I was watching it as I was driving to work, watching it as I was coming back from work, and like, oh, man.
You're watching it as you're driving to work? Wait a minute.
Well, don't listen to that. That is not admissible as evidence. No, like, I had it on as I'm driving. You said you had it on, too. What are you talking about?
I was listening.
You were looking at it once in a while. Come on, we all do.
Once in a while.
You see?
On during the eclipse. And
I, like when you're in traffic on, you know, in L.A., there are many stops. And many times, I was so terrified going up there, going up to Oregon, that I thought there was going to be huge traffic to get there.
Oh, yeah.
So I got up on Sunday morning at 2 a.m. to make the four-hour trip by 10 o'clock.
I got any traffic?
There was zero traffic. No, because people are not idiots. They're not, you know, people don't drive at 2 a.m. in the morning, you know. Except for Jason, who's not here today. Well, once Jason catches up, we'll start dealing him in on these. But I was so terrified of the traffic. I was so afraid that I was going to miss it. Much like Dr. Paul Stubbs was afraid he was going to miss this stellar event.
Yes.
Which was not so stellar, ultimately, you know, in the metaphorical sense.
A little more visually interesting, but all right.
Yeah, you know, the end, all the way to the end, when it happens, it's these, like, cheesy explosion effects, which are, like green-screened on the existing image, and it looks so bad. It's like, we waited a whole episode for that garbage?
The wormhole opening up in Deep Space Nine was more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, it was like there's just like this weird like explosion. Like the star is going to explode and there'll be smoke coming from it. You know? I mean, no. And he wasn't even watching it. Jesus, man. Yeah, come on.
Weird. He's looking at his computer.
The jackass is like looking at his computer. Hey, oh, do you remember how you put us all in peril? You remember how you like created genocide on these robots? For this, do you want to turn your head 180 degrees and look at this thing? No, you're going to look at your screen. It's like, I mean, it's like if I watched the eclipse through the rearview mirror of my car. It's like, oh, it looks pretty good, everybody. I wish I could see it. No, it was terrible. And then Picard doesn't say anything. They just fly off.
Well, it's over. It's like the eclipse ended. I'm out of here.
Now, that is true. I will say, as I told you, because I called Kim. Now, here's the thing. If you ever want to be friends with Kim, you can call her late at night.
That's true.
And we called her late at night at 2 a.m. Myself and my son, we called her. We talked to her so I could stay awake.
He startled me because I don't expect my phone to ring at that time. Oh. Wide awake.
But I called you at 2 a.m. And then I called you the next day at 2 p.m., so a 12-hour gap, but we still talked. It was great. Well, we're doing everything we can not to talk about this episode, but that's okay.
but at the very beginning when they're waiting for this event and talking about it, then suddenly the ship gets sucked into the stellar matter.
Yeah, another weird thing. Now, first of all, we have to go through...
immediate crisis right from the top.
but before that, we have the perils of high definition.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Poor Will Wheaton going through puberty, going through adolescent acne. You know the standard definition? We never saw that. But, oh, man. He's like, it's a cheek shot and...
tight close-up.
A tight close-up. I am glad I was never on television when I was going through puberty because... It was rough. It was a rough image in high definition.
He's fallen asleep in his quarters, sitting at his desk studying.
His weird quarters with a molecule and all sorts of, you know, science stuff, as we all do.
A molecule.
Well, there's like, you know, there's all this weird crap scattered all over his, you know, desk to indicate that he's busy. But yes.
Open container that will come back to haunt him.
Yeah, this weird petri dish full of robots that no one seemed to have missed. See, here's the thing too. Like, he's beating himself up because, like, oh, I took it out of the thing, out of the sick bay to, you know, do further experiments. Then why don't you lock down sick bay better? You know, if someone can just grab this stuff, you know, if I just grab Ebola out of a doctor's office, it's like, oh, maybe you should lock that, you know?
Yeah, apparently they have a genetic library or something on the ship.
Yeah, with nanites. Sure, why not? But yes, you're right. It starts off very promising. You know, I mean, we see, you know, a much taller Will Wheaton. You know,
it's the first time you see him not in his little multicolor kid's outfit.
I don't know. Maybe.
New Ninja Turtle t-shirt.
Yes.
It's an adult in his gray uniform.
Yeah, he's got his gray uniform. Now these are all new uniforms too. All the cast complained about the previous two season uniforms.
Oh, with a little sailor kind of motif.
Yeah. They're super tight. They make you look fat. I guess they smelled because they retained.
What?
Yeah, because they were like a spandex kind of thing, and they couldn't dry clean them properly, so they would just retain this sweat in them. And like the odor would just.
You knew these things.
Well, I don't know because I like to talk about this stuff. If I didn't, then you wouldn't be listening to this podcast. But it's a terrible podcast.
Weird things I've never even heard of and thought about. And you're like, well, of course. Of course, they smelled. They were made of spandex and lycra, and they were manufactured.
Well, those. I mean, when they switched over to these outfits, you finally felt like this was like a big boy show, right? I mean, it's like, yeah. Oh, they're not wearing these awkward jumpsuit things.
Look like high school production of Space Show.
Right, yeah. Exciting Space Show, starring Englishman, guy with beard, person who pretends to be blind. They also changed the opening credits. This was the first season they changed the opening credits from the Earth-centric pullback.
Didn't even notice.
Oh my God! Like, what are you doing on this podcast?
Star Trek.
Get out of this podcast! What are you doing? Go back to HodorCast.
I represent the average Joe Schmo listener who needs to be enlightened with your attention to detail.
That is such a spin.
Your knowledge of things.
You know every beat of the old series. I know that.
Maybe.
Yeah, yes.
But I don't know all this behind-the-scenes stuff.
Don't wait for the translation. Answer the question.
Answer me now. You always surprise me with weird little obscure things, you know.
This behind-the-scenes stuff fascinates me probably more than in front of the camera nowadays. Because it's so fascinating how they made this show. And the fact that this season again, in this episode one, this was actually the second episode filmed, but they did drop in that, you know, whole thing about Beverly Crusher being, you know, oh, I just got back from, you know, the Starfleet Academy, blah, blah, blah. It's like,
I missed 2 inches of it.
What a weird thing to say. What a strange.
Odd expression.
Yeah. What was I going to say? But no, I do notice all this stuff. And this episode especially is so different than the rest of the episodes that we'd seen before. And it was like they finally got their act together. And they're finally moving forward. And this episode is not a great representation of it. But you see the attempt to be better. To make it better. Are you there, Kim? Can you hear
yes.
me? Okay, all right.
I've stopped listening. Yeah. Watching Babylon 5.
Oh, gosh. It was the dawn of the third age of mankind, 10 years after the Earth-Mimbari War. The Babylon Project was a dream-given form. Its mission... So I know the whole thing.
Earth-Mimbari? Did you say?
The Earth-Mimbari War. Yeah. So good. Yeah, so there's a big war between Earth and the Mimbari, which were much more powerful than the Earth. But the last minute before they destroyed the Earth, they stopped, and they surrendered, and they pulled back. And no one ever knew why.
Oh, really? Interesting.
But we're not going to talk about that.
We're going to talk about Dr. Stubbs in sickbay lying on his stomach. It just looked weird. Like
I know. It's like, what,
like he injured his butt in the previous scene.
That's what I thought. It's like, oh, are we doing a rectal probe? Is this...
just like so strange.
I fell on my butt, doctor. Please check it out.
On his elbow saying, oh, doesn't your son never have any fun? Why are you so interested in
I know. It's like, what are you... As you're presenting your butt to everybody, it's like
young friend.
Well, yeah, who's that actor? Now he's a good actor. You said he was from St. Elsewhere.
Jenkins. He was on Scrubs.
Oh, he's on Scrubs. That's right. Yeah, on Scrubs. And he was good. He did a good job on this. Although he got a little...
You like the moment when he gets zapped by the nanites and he does like this launched leaping out of a plane parachute spread eagle.
Well, I will say that like the episode, everything he does gets bigger and bigger as it goes on. It's just this episode doesn't know what it wants to be. It wants to be like a coming of age story for Wesley. A mother returns to her son, Dr. Frankenstein. Like, oh my God.
Scientist obsessed with baseball. Like elaborate baseball side story.
Like the middle of the episode, a baseball analogy comes out. Like this whole, you know, do you follow baseball, Wesley? You know, I don't recreate it. I put it all up in my brain. The box scores and the hits and the runs and the errors. I'm like, what the hell is going on here?
Can you talk about how baseball is now dead or something?
Yeah, it's very.
You find that little section.
People have no patience anymore. That's why baseball died out.
Oh, abandoned by a society that prized fast food and faster games. What? I always associate baseball with health food and.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Prize fast food and faster games. Lost to impatience.
Lost to, exactly, yeah, it's people who are too impatient, lost to impatience. It becomes, it's, now Michael Piller wrote this episode, and what eventually, he became the story editor for this season, because he wrote it, and I think it's Brandon Braga, I don't know who was the, who was one of the executives running the show at that point in time, but he was a big baseball fan too, and he's like, oh, well, I'll make you, you know, my number one. So they leaned heavily into that, like that should have been cut. Like, you cut way down or cut completely, because it served no purpose.
Yeah, it's just strange. Just sort of dropped in there.
Yeah, and then he's like, laying in his room, like, you know, it's like, bottom of the ninth, two outs, you know, long form is up there, and cold is black. I mean, like, what are we doing here? What is going on? What becomes a baseball show all of a sudden? And that doesn't pay off. There's no payoff at the end. He's like, Picard, we hit a home run. I'm like, okay, all right, fine. You brought it home, good. But there's nothing. So,
I thought there was some anecdote about how American POWs in Vietnam would go through baseball games in their mind just to pass the time and stay sane. You know, have you ever heard anything about that?
No.
I may be mixing that up with some other story.
Now, why are you... Now, you chide me about my costumes thing, but you're bringing in this, you know, this really, like, sad story about American POWs passing the time. Like, in prison, you know, it's like, oh, bottom of the ninth. Yeah.
Just telling you what popped into my head while I was listening as I was driving.
Yes, listening. I do have to say also, though, because I had it in my car as well, in my Kia Soul, my 2011 Kia Soul with light-up speakers, that Kim has been in and enjoyed.
I did.
Yes. But listening to the music and the sound effects remastered with those, you know, big bass speakers was great.
Oh.
Yeah, that's, I mean, because, you know, like, again, this was, what, 89 maybe that this aired? I mean, you had like one speaker, maybe two, maybe they were just getting into stereo, but they're like still tinny speakers. This sounded great. You get that the deep, you know, hum of the Enterprise in the background, created by Harv Bennett.
Oh, that's right.
Or no, not Harv Bennett, Nicholas Meyer.
Oh.
Jackass.
Did you appreciate the reference to the food slots? That's so weird.
Food slots? Oh, with Beverly or what?
Yeah, they don't call them replicators. They're like food slot.
The food
in the sick bay where her water is bubbling.
Does she say like disable food slot or something like that?
Computer, repair food slot. Food slot is working properly.
I was reading how the writers hated the replicators.
Why?
Because it could solve any sort of problem, like if they're like, oh, well, this is an ancient Ming vase, and it's like, oh, you dropped it, and then like, there's the complication. But because this is like the 24th century, it's like, oh, I'll just replicate another Ming vase. And so they do that. So
yeah.
They could have nothing which was irreplaceable. Everything was replaceable.
Like Picard's little sculpture that he loved so much.
Right, that exactly.
Replicate another one.
Yeah, he really could just make another one. And
maybe
no,
that's why he didn't care at the end of Generations.
That's probably true. He's just like, I have like 50 more of them, to be honest.
All piled up in the corner.
Yeah. his whole room is just filled with them. He can barely walk through. He can, all over his bed. He can't sleep,
All over his bed. Little corner of the bed he sleeps on.
We're all just little people inside.
Plays with them in the tub.
Yeah. Computer, water, hot. How much are we going to get through on this episode? So let's
we're
just
talk about everything else, buddy.
Let's just talk about everything else. No, but here's
one little interesting tidbit that reminded me of something you had questioned. Is like you thought the conference room was right next door to the bridge, like bridge adjacent.
Yes.
We had this discussion. I don't think so. Well, you know where Picard's office is. It's like downstage left. Right?
Yeah.
But after all these malfunctions are happening, and Picard says, "Everyone, meet me in the conference room," and he exits upstage right. So maybe that answers your question of where that is.
Well, I know it's upstage right. I mean, I mean, I always knew that's where it was, the conference room. But it's like right behind the bridge, right?
I envision it being at least a short walk away.
No, because as the ship passes by in the opening credits, you see those windows.
Ooh.
And you see a figure walking around there.
Oh, like wait, at the back of the saucer section.
Yeah, not at like the very back, but in the top bubble. In the top bubble, there's.
Oh, really? These details, I gotta look at. I need a big TV.
You need a big TV, Mike. What? Are you...
Well, I think my 13-inch CRT.
You don't have a 13-inch TV. Are you now like plugging for the audience to buy you a TV, Kim? What is this?
Yes.
Just replicate another one. Make it bigger.
Replicate a 70-inch 4K.
My mom, she actually has a small TV, a small little like probably like 15-inch TV.
15?
Well, yeah, it's really small. It's a very small TV. I don't know what and
my laptop is a 15-inch.
It is, maybe it's 17-inch, maybe it's like a computer monitor, and when I went up there, this was like a 3-day trip to get up to Oregon. The first day I drove 7 hours up to Chico, California to see my mom, with her tiny TV, trying to get HD signals that were constantly freezing, because like HD doesn't like, it doesn't get fuzzy, it just freezes, so she's trying to watch like Columbo on Cozy TV, and it constantly freezes. I'm like, Mom, how can you watch this? Like, oh, I just keep it on in the background. Like, oh, okay. This is such an off the rails episode.
Off the rails adjacent.
Rails adjacent. I just want to talk about my Eclipse trip, as opposed to Star Trek. As opposed to this episode, which lost my attention halfway through. Let's talk about Gates McFadden. So Gates McFadden is brought back, triumphantly brought back, and I got to be honest, this is a rough episode for her. I mean, all of her line reads are so stilted,
Slow.
So
the pace of the whole episode is very slow. I noticed.
There is a line she has. I can't remember what it was. It's towards the middle or the end, where she's talking about Wesley, and she just pauses. It should be like. I can't remember what it is, but everything is so, it's so slow and stilted. Jean-Luc, what were you like when you were 17? It's like.
Has my son ever been in love? Weird question. Yes, with me.
She's asking all these weird people weird questions, I mean.
Oh, we're talking about the scene with Wesley when he says, you weren't even here.
Yeah, that's it. Yes, because he's like, you weren't even here. And then she pauses, and then she's like, as though she's like ordering a hot dog, she's like, I'm here now. You know, it's like, it's so, do you remember that? Am I wrong about that?
Yeah. No, it's very, yeah, like you said, it's very stilted. And you'd think she would react more strongly to that.
Yeah, he should.
I'm here now. What are you looking for? Can I help you?
Yeah, it's like she has nanites in her. And she's a computer program. It's. I mean, maybe she's just kind of like getting her sea legs back at this. But like that should like every. He's angry, and actually, like Will Wheaton's doing some good acting in this episode. He really is kind of like, you know, holding his weight on this, and he's angry here. He's like, you weren't here, and she should have been like, I'm here now. What do you want from me? Instead, she takes this long, weird pause. I'm here now. What do you want from me? Like, oh my god.
That's right. They're having this weird discussion about how he needs to take it easy and not work so hard. And you're like, I'm trying to save the ship from being pulled
this up. Is
for like the 15th time.
This is like in the fourth act of the episode.
Yeah.
Like every system on the ship is going haywire. They're by a supernova, and the doctor's like, I just want to check in on your love life. Like, Jesus, Mom, what are you doing? Do you not know
even
what...
Even when you're off duty or on duty, you know, relax. Like, he's the only one who knows how to fix all this.
I know. I'm not going to fault Gates too much on this. Well, I just did. But that's... See, here's the thing. I get to be critical about this stuff. You may love Gates McFadden, and maybe I love her in certain scenes. I loved her in the one where she was in her own pocket universe. That was so good. But this one, she tanks this. And I can say this because I'm a writer and I'm an actor, former actor, on a sci-fi series. So I'm about as close as I can get to being like an authority on this. I don't know why I'm upset by this, but
you're very upset about this.
Well, see, like, here's the thing is that, like, I know there's a lot of people who just love everything about Star Trek and can't look at it with a critical eye. And I think the thing that I enjoy, along with you and along with Matt and Jason, is that we can look at the show and love it. And also be critical about it and say, oh, that didn't make as much sense. That wasn't as good as it should have been. You know, because if we love it just without any sort of commentary on it, then we're just, you know, crazy fans. But this was not a good episode, and this was not Gates' finest hour. And I know she's here in Los Angeles, and someday I'll have to own up to this, and I'll see her and be like,
she'll hear you.
She's probably, you know. She actually has a really funny Twitter. Have you seen that?
Oh, no.
She has a really funny Twitter where she puts the Dr. Crusher doll all over the place, like next to her coffee cup or next to a script. And it's just like this weird kind of she has kind of this really odd streak to her, which we should get her on the podcast. But
well, not now.
Not now. No way. I burned that bridge. Oh, my God. I can't believe it.
You should, if you ever were to get around, what would you ask her? How did you feel about returning season 3?
What would I ask her? I would say, what would you have liked to seen your character do? You know, because I always thought that they never figured out what to do with her. They got a little bit of traction with Deanna Troi. They're like, well, maybe we can ship her with, like, Worf. You know, and her mother's there, Luoxana's there, so you get to see a little bit of action there. But Beverly, they never solved that.
Well, it's like they had her, she is the parent on the ship, and nothing else.
but then Wesley left.
She's also the acting coach, she's the drama teacher.
but that was never used, right? I mean, like, who had the biggest, like, acting moments and acting scenes, right? It was Riker in Frame of Mind, right, where he's, like, in the play that's, you know, where he's a crazy person in the insane asylum. He does all the acting, and she's just the acting coach. And there's that weird scene.
That's when she, she's coaching Barclay to be Cyrano de Bergerac.
Oh yeah, she does that too. She gives Data dance lessons, doesn't she?
Yes.
So, but like none of that ever comes in any degree of relevance. You know,
I think it's weird that as the Doctor. She never gained as prominent a role as like Bones did in the original series.
Yeah, I mean, the thing was is that
maybe Data filled that role.
Well, Data could do everything.
Strong central characters, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like Data and Picard, you could basically clear out the rest of the ship, and they could run the whole ship, right? I mean, that's, you know, maybe have Worf around every once in a while, but, you know, really...
so everyone can reject his ideas.
Right, yeah. You know, we should raise shields. No, belay that. You know, like, oh, okay, you know. Because he makes a lot of suggestions in this one, too. He wants to, like, you know, flood the ship with gamma radiation and... and he's probably right, too. I mean, he probably could have... Well, I don't know. What a weird, strange solution, too, that they inject the nanites into Data.
Well, that's a pretty huge leap of faith. That they're, as Worf rightly says, we're going to let a Starfleet officer be taken over by these robots.
Yeah, and Picard's like, yeah, I think that's okay.
Yeah, it'll be a good, show them that we trust them.
I mean, they've basically taken over every single system on the ship. And tried to kill us with, like, nitrous oxide, or was it nitrous oxide?
No. It was like, makes them all giggle.
Laughing gas.
Very wacky nanite pose. Some weird gas at the bridge. The guy who's the helmsman sitting on the left side of your screen, he's just like...
yeah. Like, no one leaves their post, they just all cough, right?
Just touch your throat, cough, and then go back to touching buttons.
And then Riker pushes this button, and it's just gone. It's like there's no like oh, in 5 minutes it'll be like purged. It's like it's just all gone. You just use like, oh, I use the manual systems to vent that out. Like, oh, that's good job, man.
But I derailed you. Derailed about the whole role of having a doctor be one of the primary characters. She's kind of pushed off to the side.
Often. She is.
Like,
I mean,
Deanna becomes a commander, and she.
Yeah.
She has interesting character developments for her, but
she does. And the one chance that like Beverly could have been an actress was when they actually took Deanna to be the Romulan. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
She could have like acted like a Romulan, but you know, instead they just you know. So I always felt like they never. Because she was also going to be a love interest for Patrick Stewart, for Picard.
Yeah. Well, that was always sort of in the background, a little bit.
A little bit. But I remember, I can't remember which one, I guess it was The Chase, where they just started having, like, morning coffee. You know, it was, like, the writers had kind of given up on any sort of romance, and they were just like, they're just friends. They're just friends, and, you know, towards the end of the...
Why is that? Why didn't we ever develop that? People just like, eh, we don't want to see that. We want to see them have separate lovers. Like she falls in love with that guy who's a Trill.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and she falls in love with a ghost.
With the ghost.
Beverly,
I love you.
Why haven't we? We need to do Sub Rosa at some point in time. We need to tackle that one. Or did we? I can't remember if we did. We don't think we did. We are so off track here. Just to remind you, we're doing about the episode Evolution.
We're talking about Evolution.
Season 3, Episode 1, starts out well. Paul Stubbs seems like he's got this real vision. And then the nanites invade. And then he kind of turns into a dick. Like in, you know, minute. Like I actually looked and it was like minute 18. He turns into a complete dick. He's like, you know, well, we need to kill them all, Picard. Remember that I'm in charge here. Like, what happened to you, man? But then he's still nice to Wesley, and...
Maybe he's rude to Deanna. Turn off your beam into my psyche here. Turn off your beam into my soul.
Such a good line. It was so... I laughed out loud. It was so good. I'm laughing right now at it. But then they go back to the well on that twice, and there's no... She's like, you're like a portrait that's stretched too tightly. I'm like, what the hell?
Your self-portrait. So practical. So polished when he's hitting on her, sort of.
We
laugh over glasses of champagne.
Yeah, what is that? Like he's suddenly hitting on her, but then she's trying to dig some more in his like darkened room with a guard posted outside. And then he's like, "Well, do your wonderful portrait analogy. Sometimes you pull up the canvas and nothing's there. Well, that's not a great analogy. What are you talking about? I mean." What's supposed to be there? I mean,
talk about baseball.
Yeah. Like, if you would talk to her about baseball, that would have made more sense, but it suddenly became this weird analogy battle. So, yeah, that was kind of... There's so many weird things. Then he becomes a little bit like Dr. Frankenstein when he tries to blow them up, you know, with the gamma burst. And remember that? Like, he just, like, takes matters in his own hands, and he's just...
Oh,
like,
yeah. He just points his phaser.
Yeah, he just, like...
He has a phaser. Standard issue for guests. There you go.
Like, Worf gives him a phaser. I'm issuing you a phaser, you know. If you see a nanite, shoot it. His characterization gets kind of weird. He makes all these crazy, you know, crazy Ivan ideas. I'm making that for the Hunt for Red October. Remember that? Oh. That, like, the submarine would pull a crazy Ivan.
Oh, yeah.
I love that phrase. I've never used that phrase before in conversation.
Yeah, I haven't heard you say that before.
But because we've invoked the Hunt for Red October, I can use crazy yes. Ivan.
It all ties together. We've gotten to my favorite part of this entire episode.
Okay.
Involving Data. You must know what I'm talking about.
Tell
Data
me.
Gets to affect a new voice.
Oh, yes.
Your bodies are strange. They went straight to my vocal cords and changed the way I talk. Yeah.
Let's see. Vocal pitch up to half steps. That's what the nanites want. We want a higher pitched voice.
I like to think if my iPhone invades my hand, it'll make me talk like this. Hello, Mike. What is crazy Ivan?
My God, she is infected by her iPhone. Listen to the way she's talking.
Phone just sank into her hand. It's amazing.
Yeah, I was...
How it goes in through his fingertips. His skin covering.
Yeah. This...
His hand covering. He doesn't say skin. My hand covering.
My hand covering. It's...
Of course, like... I love any episode where Data goes crazy and is taken over by a different persona.
So... Right, because then we get Brent Spiner just going for it, right? He's just, you know, channeling his deep acting skills and you know, pulling out some character, like in Masks. Yeah.
Yes.
and then they make
talk about Masks.
Well, we should talk about Masks, but they make Dr. Paul Stubbs apologize to Data, the robot. Like a weird, and then they're like, okay, like what is mercy? You know, and it's like this weird kind of conversation where he's like, it means to forgive. Why don't they say what is to forgive? I mean, if you like, you're in Data, you know everything. It's like they're driving a
and
boat.
I understand
or something.
These abstract concepts. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, like Data knows mercy. I don't. But I mean, it gave it the kind of alien thing and allowed them to say, you know, we accept. And so, and then we have this crazy, like voiceover by Picard. It's like, you know, the nanites have left his body, and then we were able to transport them over to planet Boga Loga Joe 7, where they will live forever, and we'll never pick that up again.
7.
Well, I gotta keep
traveling at warp 9 to the Boga Loga Joe system. 7 planets.
And yet you remembered what it was called. You see? It's catchy. I don't remember the name of this planet, but Boga Loga Joe 7 sounds pretty good, right?
No worse than Wrigley's Pleasure Planet.
This is true. This is true. Actually, I think Wrigley's Pleasure Planet is the best planet of all.
What goes on there? Oh, the Pleasure Planet.
Oh, yeah.
It's not the Do Your Taxes Planet. No, that's terrible. No,
it actually is. It's like Iceland and Greenland. They switched it, and you get there, you're like, oh, God damn it, I got to do my taxes. Oh, this is terrible.
False advertising.
So is there anything else we want to cover about this episode? We've given it so much thought, so much less than I wanted to talk about my Eclipse experience. That was only 90 seconds long. This is far longer. Is there anything? I think we've covered it.
At this last scene with Beverly talking to Guinan, talking about motherhood and raising teenagers.
Yeah.
You should identify with that.
Yeah. I do a little bit. Yeah. I mean, my eldest, my 13-year-old. See, girls develop a little bit quicker than boys. I'm telling everyone this because no one knows that but me.
What?
Well, first of all, like, he's an eighth grader now, and all the girls are taller than him. So that we've reached that phase where, like, we dropped him off at school the other day, and they're all, like, you know, a foot taller than him. Like, hey, Kiernan. And
is he bothered by it?
No, he doesn't care. He's totally fine. He was, you know, standing there like with Three Tall Women by Edward Albee. And like, all these girls are starting to call him and circulate around him, and I'm like, hey, buddy.
Call him? Ooh.
Or FaceTime him. Yeah, it's, I mean, but he's totally oblivious to it. It's like, no, Dad, they're just my friends. It's like, oh, buddy. I hope that's true, because they better stay away from you. But I did feel a little that, like, I did commiserate a little bit. I did understand a little bit what she was saying. You know, when she's like, tell me. Actually, that scene's like the most human scene that she does.
That Beverly does?
Yeah. Like, what do you know about her? Like, that's like, that line is actually a funny line, and she has pretty good timing. I don't know if it was like, you know, Guinan, like, kind of, or I mean, Whoopi Goldberg, you know, kind of bringing out the comedy beats with her or setting her up maybe to succeed. But that scene actually worked. Now, what you didn't see was some of the deleted scenes of this, including they were going to, like, Wesley's friends were going on a ski trip in the holodeck. And that's where we see that girl, which he eventually ends up with at the end.
Oh, well, that's the same girl. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, this guy, the actor's name is Scott Grimes, and we've seen him before,
Scott,
right?
Scott Grimes?
Yes.
That's Scott Grimes?
Yes. What is Scott Grimes in? How do I know him?
Grimes. I love Scott Grimes. We were talking about him. He's going to be in Orville, and he was the voice of Steve Smith on American Dad.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's, oh, yeah, he's the pilot in the Orville.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so, like, he's in this deleted scene where he's like,
this picture you sent me. Oh, yeah. That's totally him.
Oh, yeah. He's like a teenager, and he comes up. You can watch the deleted scenes. Maybe I'll put it up on our Facebook page. And he comes up. He's like, hey, Wesley, we're going to go skiing in the Alps and the holodeck. And I got two girls here, and I can't handle them both. And Wesley's like, oh, man, I got to go check out these nanite stuff. He's like, okay. And then later she gets injured because the holodeck malfunctions and she falls.
Oh.
And so, you know, they're like, oh, it's not supposed to happen. And he's there again. But yeah, so, and their outfits. How would you describe their outfits, Kim? These ski outfits.
Cirque du Soleil in the 80s.
meets Skittles, basically. They are so brightly colored.
Chase the rainbow.
No one would ever ski in this. No one would ever be alive in these. These were... they didn't...
Like Futurama style costumes. They would make fun of Futurama, how rings around your elbows and around your shoulders.
Right, yeah. but if you want to check out that scene, that's kind of a fun scene. It's actually not a bad scene. I wish they would have focused much more on Wesley's development than all this nanite, you know, binary star nonsense. Because they hit it so many times that it just became a drone. And it's just like, man, there's no danger to this. Like, they were like, oh, I guess we could leave the system, but we choose not to, and we've got to launch the thing, but we can't do it now. It's just, the stakes were so weird in this one.
Yes, lots of weird little elements put together, the baseball thing, and...
Yeah.
And I...
And so, like,
half, being taken over.
I know. it's like they lost their confidence halfway through the script with the Wesley subplot. And just threw everything they could, all the ideas they had on their corkboard on 3x5 cards. They're like, oh, I got baseball over here. Well, I got nanites. Let's yes. see. You know, what else can we put in?
As a writer, how do you think that develops in the writer's room? You think different writers are like, I really think this baseball thing works. Someone else is like, no, we should focus on the mother-son relationship.
Well,
like,
no, I know.
I like the technology stuff.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, because... there are sometimes, and, you know, as an FYI, I'm a story editor now, so I can talk about that too. So you guys lay off me.
Expert on acting.
I am the most talented, knowledgeable podcaster in any Star Trek podcast, and yet those bastards at Trek FM...
Those jackasses. You haven't called them jackasses in a long time.
They are. Those sons of bitches. They are nanites. They are Paul Stubbs. You know, they are Scott Grimes trying to pull me away from my job of podcasting to go skiing in the Holodeck Alps, and I'm not going to do it.
You're going to Boca Loca Joe 7.
You still remember it, Kim. Do not make light of that. It was a good name. It's a terrible name. I so gagged out on that.
Run by Joey Jojo Jr.
Oh, you and your Simpsons.
I like to insert Simpsons references, as Jason likes to put in Star Wars references.
Yes. Jason, who's not here. If you like Game of Thrones, this is not on the Feral Audio Network, but I don't care, because no one's listening to it on the Feral Audio Network. Or maybe Land, my producer's listening to it all the way through, and he's going to cut this out. But we do a podcast called HodorCast. We only started, like, what, fifth season or sixth season?
Middle of fifth season.
So it's very comprehensive. But we do a lot of improv of scenes. That's probably the best thing, the thing that distinguishes us from that. And unlike Star Trek, I know nothing about Game of Thrones, really. So all
just
of my
the TV show, not just, the books.
Yeah. So when I talk about it, I am so far afield and I'm so wrong that it's fun to listen to.
Quote you on that the next HodorCast.
Well, you can, but it won't stop me from talking.
That's true.
I will still say that I'm right. This last episode was terrible, by the way. Not of HodorCast, of Game of Thrones. All right, so we should wrap this up.
All right.
I guess, right? Yeah. A couple of things. I saw they're starting to put up advertisements for the Orville, Seth MacFarlane show. And I know what this is not Star Trek, and I've sort of kind of distanced myself from Galaxy Quest, even though I love that movie, as not being Star Trek canon. But the advertisements that I'm seeing are not comedic. They're more dramatic. Like the posters I'm seeing, like on bus stops and buses, they just show the crew, and it says the Orville. It says from creator Seth MacFarlane. So it's interesting that they're kind of pushing it as like, just watch it. You know, you're going to get some comedy. You know, if you know Seth MacFarlane, you're going to watch it. But this is sci-fi. And I also like the fact, again, we talked about the uplifting nature of this, that he wants it to be a positive future. And I was driving today, I saw that, and I was just like, I want to see this, because that's Next Generation. You know? Are you typing? Mm-hmm. I hear you typing.
I'm looking to see when it starts. September 10th.
September 10th, yeah. I also saw my first bus advertisement for Star Trek. Star Trek Discovery on the 24th. Mm-hmm. We've seen some of the trailers. They're darker, definitely much more serialized. So it'll be interesting to watch these two. And I don't know how much we'll, you know, if you're on Twitter, if you want to go to the web page, the Facebook page, and say, hey, talk about the Orville. Maybe I'll talk about the Orville a little bit, like we're doing right now. Or if you don't, tell me that too. Say, no, just stay on Star Trek. That's fine too. But because it is an homage, it is so deeply linked to Star Trek, it's almost like we have to sort of, you know, discuss it. We've talked about Star Trek Continues.
Yeah.
There's a new one. I haven't watched it yet. But anyway, we're wrapping things up. Do you have anything else, Kim?
We barely talked about Discovery. Oh, yeah, that.
Oh, yeah, that. Well, that's going to get bigger and bigger and louder and louder. I've been away for a long time, and so I felt like we had to do something. So this was the first thing that came to mind, and I knew this was something we could kind of, like, you know, whip out and just, you know, do it. That sounds really weird, doesn't it? That's not
good. You know, lays on your stomach in Beverly 60. Have your butt examined.
Oh, I hope you didn't read my unauthorized biography. What? What is
my
that?
My mother was very strict.
Like, what are we... Who writes a biography on a guy who hasn't done anything? I mean, he's a wunderkind, but this is going to be... There's, like, echoes to Dr. Daystrom, obviously, Dr., you know, Paul Stubbs. Paul Stubbs is such a... It's such a baseball name, too, isn't it? You know, now batting Paul Stubbs.
Stubbs.
Top of the ninth, Stubbs is up to pitch. I can't remember where I was going to go with that, but...
Daystrom.
Yeah, I know. I don't remember. It's not that important. It's not that important. We've covered all the important stuff. I went to see the eclipse. It was amazing in 2024. You almost go down to Texas and see it with me.
Yes.
And with Kim. Kim, you've got to go. We all have to go.
Yes.
My son will be 20 then. My God. I know. Oh, my God. Oh, God. So old. But we had to do this, and I appreciate you listening to this podcast. Kim, I appreciate you venturing this episode, which is about as middle of the road as we could get. What's that?
You're welcome.
Oh, yeah. There's a lost episode after the whole Charlottesville stuff. I would say that I tried to do one. I told Kim this about the first interracial kiss on TV between Uhura and Kirk. And I researched it and I started like four times. And each time I realized what a bad idea that was.
It should get more and more dark.
Well, I will talk about something uplifting with all this violence, all this, you know, Nazism, because we can't do Patterns of Force or, you know, it's, you know, like, let's, yeah, you know, let's do a Nazi episode. No. You can't do that. So I thought, I'll do something uplifting. But then I thought, I am so mostly unqualified to talk about this, you know, about, you know, race relations. So I'm so out of my league that I just stopped. So that will go forever sealed. But thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Hey, put down a review in iTunes. It helps.
Yeah. It really helps. Comment.
I forgot to read one.
Oh, did you get a new one?
I thought
after the guy who said it's terrible.
Yeah, that's true. We did get one that said it was terrible. So let's. Kim, fill some time here. This is...
About the POWs in Vietnam.
good. Stick with that, Kim.
I swear I heard that somewhere. Some story about somebody just keeping their sanity by just replaying. Or maybe I'm just thinking of a movie scene. That's more likely.
I'm Kim Miller, and I just want to talk about POWs. All right, here we go. Hold on. This is so bad. This is such a bad part of the podcast, but it's
okay.
What
are you looking up?
I'm looking up our iTunes, the thing, see if someone has put down another review. Ratings and reviews. And I don't think they have. No one has.
Well, while you're looking, I found a photo that I took with Brent Spiner about 7 years ago. You know how Facebook does that in this state? It popped up and I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that.
You took a picture of Brent Spiner?
When he was here for Comic-Con, I took a photo with him.
Oh, will you post that? Post that on the Facebook page.
Yes. We were so young 7 years ago.
Oh, God. I can't do it.
Did you watch any of the bits and pieces from the Las Vegas convention?
No. Did you?
I started watching the Next Generation cast panel. It was so weird. As usual, Marina Sirtis just goes nuts from the beginning. And she's sort of moderating, but just throwing in all sorts of snark. Weird. I didn't finish it.
Yeah, I know. I was planning on going, everyone. I really wanted to go. I was going to go on Saturday, but I had so much work to do. I mean, I had to finish a movie. I have my own series I'm working on that I'm writing that we're getting ready to start shooting at some point in time. I'll tell you about that soon. And I was story editing on this new series I'm working on, and I couldn't. So, but... You know, when you've seen one convention, you've seen a lot of them. You know, it's these same people kind of coming up over and over mm-hmm. and over again. And mm-hmm. no one from the audience ever comes up and asks like a tough question. Yeah. You know, no one ever says, like, you know, like, what was the deal with the season 3, episode 1, man? I mean, like, no one ever, like, calls them on that because everyone wants them to be, like, their friend, ultimately. They want to be like, you asked that question. I remember that in Phoenix in, you know, 2014, you asked what my favorite episode was. Oh, yeah. I mean, like, we all want to be their friend. Or it's the other side where it's like, would you sing happy birthday to me? It's my birthday. It's like, no, don't do that. Yeah. Don't do that. So.
Isn't that people on the panel just look so uncomfortable and just like, let's get through this sort of feeling. It's like,
all the Star Trek actors?
Think of them that way. Yeah, well, not all of them, but a lot of them just look kind of bored. Like, I can't believe you people are still showing up for this. You know, just to hear us all kind of...
Well, I was thinking about it because as I was thinking about this upcoming podcast series, and so few of the Star Trek actors have escaped, you know, the bubble of Star Trek. You know, I'll tease a little bit of it in the respect that I was thinking about, you know, Michelle Forbes, who the girl who said no to 3 different series of Star Trek. And you think, wow, how could you turn down 3 different series, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager? How could you be so confident?
Next Generation? What? What do you mean she was in Next Generation?
She was offered a series regular. She was offered to be like,
oh,
you know.
Oh, I thought you meant.
No, yeah, she did 12 episodes of that, and then she was offered series regular, she turned it down. She was offered Deep Space Nine, turned it down. She was offered Voyager, turned it down. And I was like, what moxie, what incredible chutzpah to say, I will turn down 7 guaranteed years of work because I think I can do better.
Mm.
And
Ensign Rowe.
Ensign Rowe, yes. Michelle Forbes, Ensign Rowe. So, but to a large degree, she was kind of right. She did go on to have a pretty good career. Not a great one, but a pretty good one. But
she was in like the first season of The Killing, which you can see on Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at her IMDb, she's done a lot of work. She's, you know, pops up everywhere. She was on another. She's on another series right now for the past couple of years.
No,
But I don't know if you can say the same for most of the actors of Star Trek. You know, I mean, what Next Generation? Yeah. I mean, besides Patrick Stewart.
Good point.
Jonathan Frakes, no. Michael Dorn, no. I mean, LeVar Burton already had a career.
Yeah.
You know, when he came on board and sort of, you know, he kind of rolls off that. Will Wheaton has kind of reinvented himself as sort of a you know, nerd guy. Deanna Troi, Gates McFadden.
Q.
John DeLancey. And then you can go on to Deep Space Nine. I mean, Avery Brooks, you know, he was a man called Hawk. And then after that, not so much. Nana Visitor did some stuff. She was on some show called Wildfire, I think, about horses or some weird thing.
Captain Janeway, she's on Orange is the New Black, right?
That's true. Yeah, she did finally, I mean, like 20 years later, 15 years later, wound up on Orange is the New Black, so that's true. Jerry Ryan did well. But Garrett Wang.
Chris Crosby was a cannibal on Walking Dead.
This is true.
Machine gunned.
Yeah, like 3 episodes, too. I'm like, oh, man. And she was in that weird John Ritter movie. Can't remember. This is many, many years
off
ago.
Off the rails.
Off the rails. Thank you for staying on the rails with us. We'll be back with more important episodes. But for right now, the moon is moving back over us, eclipsing us. I'm Mike McCafferty.
I'm Kim Miller.
And we just want to talk about...
Star Trek.
I'll take your line.
So strange here. You are weird-looking creatures.
When the train comes in, everybody rides.
Daddy Lou Odin, sir, at your service.
Your daddy can put them up, can he?
Bob, a somber, emotional state. No.
Hello, I'm Dave Ross.
Hey, and I'm Hampton Yunt.
And we host Suicide Buddies on Starburns Audio.
That's right. It's a podcast about suicide, but not to make light of it. We actually talk about suicidal thoughts, depression, kind of with a sense of levity that Dave and I have with each other. And he's my best friend. Come on.
Yeah, we're buddies. Suicide Buddies.
That's the title.
One of our favorite episodes that we've recorded so far is about this guy, Jan Pataki, who was a Polish aristocrat in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And he, one of the reasons it's possible that he killed himself is that he thought he was a werewolf.
Whoa.
Check out a clip. It also makes me think, like, we were talking about in the Norway black metal episode, how, like, just the culture of your surroundings can affect you. Like, yeah. He's in a castle in Poland. He's like, I mean, if you lived in a castle in Poland and no one knew anything about anything, you might be like, I'm a bat. I'm probably a bat.
That's like literally what happened to Batman. He literally is in his mansion. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I'm a bat.
I'm a
bat that helps people.
I'm a bat that helps people.
I'm a rich...
I don't know what you want from me. And my girlfriend, she's a cat.
A cat.
She steals things. She's a woman who steals things. She's a cat. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I help people. She's a cat. We fight a penguin.
My